Thanks. I'm really looking forward to this evening's reading. So it's great to be able to be part of it. And our first reader is Marina Hess, who has recently finished her thesis, a children's novel about an environmental disaster in Toronto. Please welcome Marina.
Hi, I'm going to read a passage from that kid's book, and it opens with the main character dreaming. Under a dark, cloud-knit sky lay a vast ocean, and atop the vast ocean sailed 10 or 20 or 100 ships with huge, strong hands attached to their oars, huge, strong hands plowing through the water, paddling the ships to shore. What extraordinary ships they were, with the hands on their oars and the eyes on their prows, their upturned prows like violin scrolls, and the high zing-zing of a violin chasing them as they zoomed across the water. And there was Claire's mother, Patty, on the prow of the ship in front, her arms crossed and her chin raised and her hair done up with bones. She was laughing as the ships came nearer to shore, nearer to Claire, and then the violin prows stretched into birds' necks, and a splash and a crash, and the ships had taken flight. They become gray flamingos. Oh no, they are pigeons. Here was Florian, choking on their feathers. Skyscrapers 1,000 stories tall loomed over him, forming a forest canopy with their antennae, sealing off the air supply. "He can't breathe," Claire cried to the pigeons, who were also gray-suited zombies with guns for beaks and guns tucked under their wings and bullets adorning their feet. "And the ocean is gone. You drank it all, you greedy pigs." She grabbed Florian's hand, and they ran and ran until they were parched, but there was nothing to satiate them. "I drank the ocean," said Kevinar, showing them the giant straw he'd used. "It's mine. I drank it all. You can't have it. You're dead." With a sigh, Claire felt her dream fall away from her. She opened her eyes and her bedroom slowly materialized, millions of squirming dots shaping themselves into her dresser and bookshelves. Her mouth was dry and the cup on her night table was empty. She slipped out of bed and crept down the hall, clutching the cup in one hand and using the other to guide her, following the familiar scratches and bumps on the wall with her fingertips. The light was off in the bathroom, but she could make out an odd shape in the corner. It was Patty, sitting on the toilet with her nightgown pulled up over her knees. "I'm in here," she hissed as Claire said, "sorry," and shut the door. She stood in the hall until she heard the toilet flush and then entered the room again. "Can't sleep, honey?" Patty whispered. "Are you hot? Is your window open?" "I'm thirsty." "Thanks," Claire said quietly as Patty refilled her cup. Something occurred to her. "Mom, you were in my dream just now." "Really? What happened?" Patty asked. "I can't remember," Claire said, and she suddenly felt a bit sad. "Never mind then," said Patty, and she gave Claire's back a brisk rub and padded off to her bedroom, closing the door firmly behind her. Claire swayed a little on her spot before retreating to bed. She was terribly aware of the size of her house as she went. The basement seemed very far away. She tried to ignore the noises coming through her window. Raccoons or cats, she told herself, or somebody getting drunk in the alley. She focused on recalling her dream instead. Had her mother even been in it? She wasn't so sure anymore. Florian had definitely been in it, running away from something, just like he'd run away from her that afternoon. They hadn't played a successful game in months, not since Halloween when they were obsessed with the Salem witch trials. The realization came with a pang. Why had it become so difficult to pretend when it used to feel so effortless and special and haunting? Maybe it was true what people said. You stop pretending at some point, whether you wanted to or not. Yes, it was inevitable, like paying the bills and listening to CBC radio in the car. Claire had held for years that she would never succumb to the deficiencies of adulthood, but she and Florian were on the brink of it, and she was turning 12. She was desperate for something to happen. With her burning face half buried in her pillow, she mouthed the words, "Please, please, please. Please let something happen. Please let something happen." Eventually, she fell asleep. Just before dawn, a gust of wind rushed into her room, filling her curtains like sails and rousing her from rest. She lurched across her bed and slammed the window shut. The wind pounded on the glass like a giant hand, or a storm that had traveled across a great ocean. If she'd been more awake, she might have marveled at its strength or enjoyed its cool temperature, but her eyes were closing even before she lay down her head again. That's it.